From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com, you are listening to Figure Four Daily with your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It is April 2nd, 2014. Figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of shows today. We've already had Dave and Dave on the program. And now we've got Lance and Todd here on the show. What's going on, everybody? Lance, what's up?
Not too much. Just enjoying the day.
And Todd, what's going on?
Nothing much. Just making you guys wait around.
That's right. Todd was burying me on Twitter for being late as his phone sat next to him there. Ringing away. What an opportunity today for me to go to work on both of you at the same time. What could be better?
Because you fared so well one-on-one.
How dare you, Lance? I don't even want to hear it. Don't want to hear this. Now, it is WrestleMania week, and so we've got to talk about, of all things, WrestleMania. And so what I've decided to do today is we're going to go over the entire card and give all of our predictions. And then anything else you guys want to talk about, you're welcome to jump in the middle. I know that Lance wants to make sure today that he talks about the WWE press conference and how Daniel Bryan and Triple H were doing a photo shoot together. Would you like to start with that, Lance?
Doesn't matter to me. We can open or close with it. Doesn't matter.
Let's start with it.
Okay. I didn't see the press conference. I just saw the photo tweeted out probably from the end of the press conference where all of the main guys were standing in a line beside each other. And I noticed that Hunter and Bryan had John Cena between them, but they were both standing there perfectly happy. And as an old-school pro wrestler, this didn't sit well with me. I understand that the business is different now, but there's a point where I like to try to preserve as much emotion as we can, and thought that undermined it greatly.
Todd, did you get a chance to see the press conference?
No, this is actually my first learning anything about it.
So you didn't hear about Batista putting over his skinny jeans on the tweeter, as he called it?
Oh, is this a different one? I actually heard about that. I thought we were talking about a second press conference. No, I heard that part, actually. I
believe this is the same one. What do you think about it? You've been to, I'm glad you're on, because Lance is looking at this from what would be a perfectly logical way to look at it if you're a pro wrestling fan, but you, Todd, have been to many UFC press conferences, and many times, and we will see it, I'm sure, with Wanderlei Silva and Chael Sonnen. These men absolutely detest each other, and guaranteed at some point they're going to be doing a press conference together.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the key is sort of how they pull it off, in that I think you can have people in close proximity and still give off the air that these guys hate each other. It's sort of it's a balancing act. It's sort of it's the James Storm Gunner thing from a number of weeks ago on Impact, where I think it's fine if they're standing in close proximity to each other and hating each other without attacking each other, but you don't want one guy talking about the other guy's father while the other guy stands there. And the same thing with this sort of a press conference, you can have the guys standing next to each other, but I don't think you want to give off the air that these guys are just having fun or they don't really care or they're just there to promote. I think if you have them in close proximity, you want to get across the idea that, these guys are going to try to kill each other this weekend. And I think you can do that with them in close proximity if you do it the right way.
Well, I think maybe in 9 out of 10 cases, you're right, Todd. But when you handcuff someone, try to drown him, beat him half to death, and then he jumps a railing and starts beating the shit out of you the day before, I think at that point you can't really do the we'll stand on the stage together in our suits. I think before the handcuffing you could get away with it, where again Wanderlei Silva and Chael Sonnen don't like each other, but I'd like to think if Chael Sonnen actually snuck up on Wanderlei and handcuffed him and then beat him up and actually tried to drown him to death.
Am I missing the drowning? What was the drowning?
When he was handcuffed, they went over the barricade, and there was the thing with the ice and the water with the water bottles in it, and Steph kept screaming at him, drown him, drown him.
I see.
His face in the tub of water.
I thought there was like a swimming pool angle that I'd missed somewhere.
No, and she was actually screaming, drown him.
I see.
And he was sticking his head under the water while he was handcuffed, which seemed a bit non-PG to me. But I think my biggest point is because there was the two defenses were, oh, well, come on, you know, it's like, you know, this really happens. And then there was the others that, well, they did mention, you know, there was a comment about John Cena being between them. And it's like, to me, that's half-assing it. You either have to go, we're a entertainment company, and go the full-blown thing, like when you interview an actor, where he talks about how we've got a great script this year, and we're really looking forward to the episode that's going to air next week, and be Paul Levesque and Brian Danielson that are really happy the way the story's come together, and go, well, we're an entertainment company. Or you've got to go all the way the other way, and once you get to this violence, you can't do the, well, it's a good thing John Cena's standing between us, or we'd be fighting each other. Because that, to me, it insults both points of view, I guess. And I think at the end of the day, and this is something I've always thought that you should try to do, that, again, as with the press conference, if they each just came out separately and did their speeches where they're not seen together, and just omit one of them from the photo at the end. And by doing so, those of us that are still wanting to suspend our disbelief, or heaven forbid there's even some that still believe, you don't ruin it for them. And I don't think any of the people that, again, don't care if they're on the stage together are going to be offended and insulted if they're not both there together. So I don't see the upside to having them both stand there, where I do see a potential downside. Now, it may only be 2% of the audience, but I don't know. It just it takes it down for me when it's that heated of an angle.
Enough to prevent people from buying WrestleMania?
Not necessarily, but even if it prevents one buy, why do it? Because do you think posing for that photo with both of them there produces a buy?
I don't think this is about producing a buy. It's just a photo opportunity.
Well, again, I'm not saying it's a deal breaker. For someone that me that grew up protecting the business and trying to have an emotional investment, it took the fun out of the angle for me.
Anything to add, Todd?
No, not really. I mean, I think that you can... I'll add something. I think whether you can pull it off or not in terms of making it seem heated while doing it at a press conference, certainly the difficulty level in pulling it off is harder in that sort of a setting in general. So, I mean, I all things being equal, it might have been a better idea to just have them come out separately, you know, have Daniel Bryan come out there and cut a promo, or, you know, Triple H first, because Daniel Bryan's babyface, Triple H come out there and cut a promo, and then you announce that they're not going to come out. They're not going to come out together because things have gotten so heated, and that's a way to sell the angle. I think, you know, that really doesn't have any downside, and it's a way to make the angle seem more heated than, you know, what they did.
All right, let's look at this card. We're going to start with the like the old school Raw. Start with the main event. Obviously. Actually, before we do that, I'll ask you both. I think that the biggest draw right now in this WrestleMania is Daniel Bryan versus Triple H. And then obviously people expect Bryan to win and go into the three-way. I think some people would argue Undertaker, probably not too many. Some maybe would argue John Cena. Lance, what is the main event of WrestleMania this year?
It's really weird because I think the two Daniel Bryan matches are sort of one match. Because I think Daniel Bryan is the main selling point of WrestleMania this year. But in a weird sort of way, the Hunter match feels more important than the three-way. That really is the moral victory, the redemption that Daniel Bryan needs. And the title match afterwards, I think, is going to be feel less important. Now, granted, once the pinfall happens, provided he wins, which I'm hoping for, I think that will be the crowning jewel. But I think, in a weird way, Hunter Daniel Bryan is the more important match on the show.
Todd, what's the main event?
I don't like the idea of sort of main events. I mean, main event is what they build the main event as. As far as the biggest drawing card on the show, I think this year it's the WrestleMania name. And I think that's been the case you know, a fair number of years in recent years, and they build up this big show, and the show does so much better than other shows, even when you have a big attraction, like the John Cena versus Brock Lesnar match. I mean, that was, you know, a bigger match than they've put on at, you know, many of the recent WrestleManias, but it did only a fraction of the buy. So, I mean, the top attraction is the WrestleMania name. As far as the match that has the most fan interest, I think probably it is the Triple H versus Daniel Bryan match. I think that Brock Lesnar and Undertaker and Cena and Wyatt are clearly the things that are going to be moving numbers, making people interested in the show. And sort of where you want to rank them, I'm fine with arguments going one way or another. But I mean, those are the keys. And Lance, I think, raises a key point when he talks about the Daniel Bryan Triple H match being bigger than the triple threat, because that to me raises what I think is one of the most important questions for WWE in making the show successful, which is the match order. And I'm not sure what the right answer is, but they have to be real careful, because if they put together the matches in a way that Daniel Bryan versus Triple H piques the crowd early, they could have a match at the end where it feels sort of like that Jericho Triple H thing, where the crowd is sort of deflated and it doesn't feel like a crescendo. And I think they need to be careful with the booking and the match placement to make sure that the triple threat at the end feels like the peak of the evening, rather than feeling like sort of they've already hit the peak and then you're sort of going down a little bit. And I think I would put Daniel Bryan and Triple H earlier in the show for that reason, so you'd have more time to build up for Daniel Bryan coming out at the end. I think the alternative is something you brought up, Brian, which is somehow involving Triple H in the main event. And I'm not sure exactly how you do that. I don't think you want to have him come out as a referee, because it sort of undermines the idea that he's been beaten up by Daniel Bryan. But, you know, maybe he orders Stephanie out there, and so she's out there in someone's corner. Or I don't think Triple H would do this, but you have Triple H come out there in a wheelchair, arguing and barking out instructions to sort of add heat to it. You do something to tie in the Triple H to the main event, or to give enough buffer time, because the Triple H Bryan issue is, to me, the key of the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree that the order is going to be really important, but to me, I really hope they don't do Triple H or Steph. To me, as soon as you started talking about that, I just got visions of TNA overbooked finishes. The fact that there is the earlier match that'll play into the three-way, it's like, I really hope they just leave them alone and don't get another ref or a fourth person or interference by the authority and complicate this thing. To me, this angle's been going with, as far as with Daniel Bryan and getting screwed and guest refs and other stuff, and bad ref counts and things for so long now that I really think you just need to leave the booking out of this thing and let them have a match. But yeah, placement is going to be key, because, you know, there is those four matches if you count the two Daniel Bryan matches that feel really big, and then you've got, you know, the Divas match, a Battle Royal, both which could be clusters, and then the Shield six-man. It's like, that's all there is on the show. So it's going to be really interesting how they decide to place them all.
I've got a better idea than my idea last night. I was thinking about this today when I did Stevie J's show. And I was thinking about the exact same thing. I was thinking that we've seen it a million times. We've seen it in WWE. We've seen it in WCW. We've seen it everywhere. When you bring a guy out, when you trot him out twice in one evening, rarely does he get over bigger the second time than he did the first time. So you've already got this Daniel Bryan Triple H match. And to me, you've got Daniel Bryan and Triple H, and then you've got the three-way with Daniel Bryan. And of the two, the only reason that the three-way would be a bigger match is because the championship is on the line and people want Daniel Bryan to win the title. That is the only reason that people would care about that match more than they would care about the Daniel Bryan Triple H match. So, if you bring out Daniel Bryan and Triple H and they have a great match and they do all their stuff, Daniel Bryan pins him, everybody's happy. Now, you got to bring out Daniel Bryan again for a three-way. And if you just bring him out and have him do the match, I can see, like, the whole crowd kind of, you know, I see people leaving at the end, even if Daniel Bryan wins, and going, man, you know, I thought it would be bigger than it was. Kind of disappointing, you know? It's neat that he won, but boy, it's a 6-hour show, you know? So here's my idea. You do Daniel Bryan and Triple H. They have a great match. Daniel Bryan wins with the knee. Everybody goes nuts. They're all cheering. They're chanting yes. And bam! Hunter comes in with the sledgehammer. Lays the dude out. They send out all the geeks. They tend to Daniel Bryan. They take him to the back. And then it's like a storyline. Is Daniel Bryan going to be able to make it out for the main event? So, main event comes. You bring out Batista. You bring out Orton. And there's no Daniel Bryan. And you purposely, for the first 10 minutes, kill this match. You let the fans go nuts. You let them hijack the show. You let them chant Daniel Bryan. You let them boo these guys out of the building. You let them get irate. You almost make it like the buffer match. The first part of the match is the buffer match where you bring them down. And then, boom, there goes Daniel Bryan's music. He hits the ring. Big comeback on both guys, like 90 seconds. Hits the knee, 1, 2, 3, wins the title, everybody goes crazy. What about that?
With the exception of it being 90 seconds, I had that exact idea as soon as you said, I have a better idea. And I was getting ready to top your idea with mine. I think that's a great idea. I didn't think of the sledgehammer. I just thought something where both he and Hunter were dead, and you didn't think Bryan was going to be there. But I think there is something to 5 or 10 minutes of Orton and Batista and that crowd just crapping all over it, and then do the Spirit of 76, Daniel Bryan comes out. But I would give them a good portion of that match. And even if it is just, you know, 10 straight minutes of them trading near falls with Daniel Bryan out there being awesome, I think that would be a way of making the main event feel bigger than the previous, rather than the 90 seconds. But I like the idea.
Todd?
I want to hate on your idea, Brian, after the way you treated me last week, but I just can't. I really like that idea, too.
Man. Well, actually, let me ask Lance. Why don't you like 90 seconds?
I just don't think it's enough. Then it feels like he just ran in after they'd beat each other up and stole it. And I don't think you want that. I think it's because how over he is and how great he is, that I think he can spirit a 76 and come out there. And the people will stay up for a longer period of time. So it feels like he worked the bulk of the match, and it was more of a deserving win rather than him just running out, blowing a comeback, and stealing it.
All right. I'll accept that. I just think it's got to be quick enough that, like, the people get into it and it sustains. Because the big key to me is at the end of the show, you want a shot of 80,000 people or whatever the real number is, 70,000 people, all doing the yes chant for, like, a while. And I think that you've got to bring him down and you've got to get it over, maybe not 90 seconds, but get it over rather quickly. Let them have their fun, go crazy, you know, have the helicopter going over and you see all these people. I think it'd just be so awesome, but I guess we shall see.
I think the three of them can keep the really great near falls up for an extended period of time with a three-way that they'd be able to keep. But especially, like you say, if they have a good 7 to 10 minutes of Dave and Randy Orton really working that chin lock, boy, that crowd will be so ready to go nuts.
So we all agree that Daniel Bryan's leaving as champion. Anyone disagree?
I'm not 100% sure that's what's happening, but that's what I would do.
All right, Todd?
I can't imagine anything else.
Todd's odds are that he wins. All right. So also on the show, we've got The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. Is anybody in their right mind on this call think that Brock Lesnar is beating The Undertaker? Todd?
Well, you sort of framed the answer in their right mind. You're sort of coloring the answer beforehand. But no, That's exactly what I was doing. I do, in fact, think that Undertaker is winning this match. Although a lot of people have been sort of down on this because the build hasn't been that intriguing. And I agree with that about the build. But I still think this has the potential to be one of the more fun Undertaker matches in a while. And that it's just sort of, it's a perfect story for this guy who's sort of getting up there in age, and you've got this monster, and Brock can just beat on him and beat on him and beat on him. And there's sort of a drama to that with Brock's physicality and his size that you don't have with someone like a Shawn Michaels or a CM Punk, even if they're better overall workers than Brock is. So I think the match itself is going to be a lot of fun, but yeah, the outcome, I mean, it doesn't, I think, have a lot of drama.
This guy says the Superdome is indoors, so you can't do my helicopter idea. I'm talking the helicopter inside the building. What's wrong with that? They don't do that? All right, before we go to Lance for his prediction of the Brock Lesnar match, Todd, as a big MMA fan, as evidenced by your biased Twitter handle of @ToddMartinMMA, have you seen the Brock Lesnar special on Fight Pass with Rock, Steve Austin, and Jim Ross?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I have it on my list of things to do, but I haven't watched it yet.
I wonder what the reaction was when they found out that those three guys did a UFC Fight Pass deal. I wonder if they even cared. I'll bet they cared.
Did you mean by they, you mean WWE?
Yeah, when Vince woke up one day and went, "Are they aired during my Raw?" That's when they aired the commercial. What do you think, Lance? Who's winning this match?
I just wish we did this this show yesterday, because then I could have picked Brock Lesnar. But seeing that it's now the 2nd of April, I'm sticking with Undertaker.
I see. Any ideas, any predictions, anything about the match either of you would like to throw in there? You're expecting a dive, not a dive. Does Undertaker do his dive this year since he's got Brock catching him? Todd, what are the odds?
Pretty good. I mean, he likes to do that dive, even if it looks crazy and you're worried he's going to kill himself. So I put it over 50% that he does a dive. One other thought of the match since you asked, I think Hell's Gate seems like a pretty darn safe bet for the finish.
It's not a bad idea. Lance, let me ask you this, and then Todd can jump in. I have been to WrestleMania live the last 4 or 5 years in a row, and I have not watched any of them on television. So now that the network is on, I've been kind of in the background watching the last 3 or 4 WrestleManias. When I saw Undertaker's return and the physical stuff he was doing with Brock on Raw, I was like, my God, this guy looks ancient. But then as I watched the last few shows on television, he's kind of looked ancient for a little while. So my question to both of you, having probably seen some of Mania on television of late, is Undertaker like really looking old now, or is he looking just about as old as he usually has been?
I think since he cut his hair, he looks a bit older. But again, part of the gimmick is he's kind of supposed to. He's a dead guy.
He's supposed to, yes. He's supposed to be very ugly.
I think he looks a bit older since cutting his hair. I'm still having a hard time adjusting to the mohawk. But again, I think, again, the question is, how is his hips and knees doing? Hopefully all right. But again, I expect to dive, and I'd much rather dive on Brock Lesnar than Deuce Shade holding a camera.
Sure. Todd, does he move like he has been moving, or is he moving worse than ever?
I don't know about moving, because we haven't seen that much physicality from him, aside from that bump yesterday, but I definitely agree with you, he looks older. And I think it's a little bit more of an issue than I think Lance seems to think it is. In that when I see Undertaker, and granted, there was one show in particular I thought this about, and I don't remember what it was, but it was one of the shows leading up to WrestleMania last year, when Undertaker made one of his first appearances, and he was doing a longer promo, and the crowd was flat, and you could even hear some people heckling a little bit. And I think we're reaching a point with Undertaker where he only comes back once a year. He looks really old. The people that know Undertaker because they've watched him for so many years, they have so much respect for him because of everything he's done. So he's a huge star to them. But I think there will reach a point, if he continues to look the way that he does and he only comes back once a year, where some of the younger fans, it might be sort of that AWA thing where Crusher and Dick the Bruiser and, you know, Nick Bockwinkel and Burn were huge stars to the guys that were already into the AWA. But to newer fans, to younger fans, it was like, who are these old guys? And Undertaker has it a little bit easier in that there are so many bells and whistles, you know, from the entrance to the lighting, to the costume, to the fact that he's only there once a year. But I do think there's that element there where as you get a younger generation there and you just have this guy come out there and he's obviously quite old and he obviously can't move that well, where I think it detracts from his act with those fans.
Lance?
I think there's a possibility of that, especially because if you're not actually watching his WrestleMania match, like, if you were a fan that's only been a fan for the last 5 years, you've at most seen, what, 6 Undertaker matches? So that's possible. And there's certainly going to be a time where he's going to have to stop. But I don't know when that is. Again, I'm someone that been watching him since day one. So again, I'm probably not going to be able to view it as impartially as others.
All right, two more. Todd's odds on A, Undertaker hurting himself in the match somehow and being out for an extended period of time, as in a year. And B, Todd's odds on Undertaker versus Sting next year.
I guess odds of him, I guess the first question, it sort of depends on how you define hurts himself. Because I can't imagine that he's not going to come out of there, you know, not ready to go in the next week if he needed to. Like, I think that's a pretty darn safe bet. But as far as something that causes him problems going forward that wouldn't allow him to do something in 4 or 5 months, I still think there's a decent shot of that. Going in there with someone that's as physical as Brock Lesnar and having the expectations that he does, along with the fact that he is older. So the odds of some sort of getting hurt to some degree, I think are, you know, real high, you know, 90%. The odds of him being injured in a way that is going to be a problem, you know, in 6 months from now, you know, maybe, you know, 30-35%. As far as what was the second question? Oh, yeah. Undertaker and Sting. I like that idea. I think it would be fun. But I just don't feel like WWE is going to do it. It doesn't seem to fit with the way that they've booked Undertaker and the way they seem to perceive Sting. So I'd like to see it, but I don't think that's going to happen. I guess I'd put that at, you know, closer to 25%.
Lance?
On the injury front, I don't think we're ever going to really know. Like, I have no doubt he's going to be feeling the match, but, again, he generally doesn't do anything for a year afterwards anyway. So I think regardless of what happens, I have little doubt that he's going to get through the match. It's going to be awesome. And other than that, we probably won't hear much, whether it be he tweaks something or seriously hurts something. I think he's going to get through it and not be wrestling regularly afterwards anyway. As far as Sting and Taker, I just don't feel it. I don't know why. I had interest in it. And I would have interest in it, but I just don't think it's in the cards.
All right. Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Big match here. Big match. I don't know if this is true, but somebody told me that the actual Andre the Giant statue, the real one, not the one that I'm making up that's made of gold and is 7 feet tall. Someone told me the actual trophy is 5 feet tall. Which, if that's the case, you should have just done 7, right? Anyway, who is winning the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal? Todd, we'll start with you.
I don't know. At this point, I just go with a mystery entrant, and I don't even know who that's going to be. As we talked about, I thought that Big Show seemed like the best idea, but, I mean, he is basically the only person that they've really strongly teased as winning the match. And while you would expect them to tease Big Show to win, if Big Show is winning, you wouldn't expect them to tease basically only the Big Show. And you look at the entrance in the match, and there's basically nobody that that stands out as a good candidate. And as far as entrance outside the match, I've sort of made the case against Rusev in the past. So I mean, I guess if I were booking it, and I don't expect this, but they're doing the tag match in the pre-show. I'd break up the Real Americans in the pre-show, have Cesaro turn face, and then have Cesaro win the Battle Royal.
Who do you think, Lance?
Well, the news of the 5 foot trophy worries me because that ruins my original pick. Because you'd mentioned that the thought of the person having to carry this trophy around for a year, if it's a 5 foot trophy, it gets really hard. I'm hedging and taking two picks. If Rusev is in it, I'm going with him. I think Big Show is too obvious. If Rusev is not in it, I'm actually going, and again, this is where your trophy concerns me, I'm going with Miz because two reasons. A, I can't think of anything more obnoxious than carrying this trophy around and bragging about it for a year, which to me is right up Miz's alley. And on the second level, ribbing this poor bugger and making him carry this trophy around for a year, I think is tremendous.
Miz doesn't need a trophy to be annoying.
No, but he's the only one that's obnoxious enough to carry it around for a year.
I think I'll go with Rusev just for the hell of it. We got three mystery participants. I'm pretty sure that one of them is RVD, but I don't know. That would leave two more. Anybody have any wild guesses who the final two mystery entrants might be?
Well, I think Rusev is probably one, but I have no idea on the last.
What about my idea of the Warrior?
Oh, Jesus.
No.
I think there's a greater chance of Hulk doing it.
Well, I think you're wrong. But, Todd, what about Warrior?
Yeah, I don't like that idea either, nor do I think it's going to happen.
Man, it's burying my ideas. All right, John Cena and Bray Wyatt in a singles match, as I've been talking about for a while. The odds makers are picking Bray Wyatt over John Cena. Now, of course, it doesn't say how. John Cena could, hit Bray Wyatt with a sheet for a disqualification. Bray Wyatt wins. Or Bray Wyatt could beat the guy clean as a sheet or something in the middle. Lance, we'll start with you. Who's winning and how?
To me, Bray Wyatt has to win. To me, it's the only way you make progress. I think if Cena beats Bray Wyatt, it does far more damage to Bray than it does benefit to John. I think the only way I could get this wrong is if Cena picks up a token win, but Bray Wyatt is the one left standing at the end and gets sort of the image of winning, whether it be John Cena pull off some silly roll-up with a 1-2-3, and then Wyatt immediately hits his finish and lays out Cena and, does something dastardly. But I think Wyatt needs to be strong, and I think he needs to win. I just think Cena's so bulletproof at this point, and Wyatt's really on his way up. So I'm going with Bray.
Todd?
Lance makes a good case for why Bray should win, but I think Cena will win.
Really?
I would also have Bray win, but they are very protective of John Cena, and they very rarely have him lose the big match to a straight out-and-out heel. It very rarely happens, and Bray Wyatt is a guy who going in here was sort of at a lower level, and it really, it doesn't really fit their pattern to, bring in a lower-level heel and then have him beat a guy at the level of John Cena. So I expect John Cena to win, even though I agree, with the exact reasons that Lance says that Bray should be winning.
Todd, this is how you lost to me in the odds game last year. You went against the odds makers.
Well, the wrestling odds makers aren't as good as the MMA odds makers.
What are you talking about? They're perfect every time.
At the end, they have to go with the line of what the people do. So, the lines move based on the betting patterns. But you frequently see very, very strange odds going in. The one that stood out to me was someone posted on the board the odds for the last Impact show with Samoa Joe and Magnus. And
for a taped show?
And, what's that?
For a taped show?
No, for the pay-per-view.
Oh, the IC.
And Samoa Joe was, a fairly sizable favorite. And I thought, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, listen, we're talking the WWE odds have been dead on 99% of the time. Now, granted, there's usually we're talking the odds 20 minutes before the show starts. So this
exactly.
far out, it means anything.
Why that doesn't matter.
This far out, it means nothing. But if 20 minutes before the show, Todd, Bray Wyatt is still the odds-on favorite, he's going to win.
I'm not disputing that. If right before the show the odds are Bray Wyatt minus 15,000, then I will be picking Bray Wyatt to win.
So the Todd's odds are that the odds may swing, but if the odds don't swing, Todd's odds are that Bray Wyatt is winning.
Sure, why not?
Just want to make sure I got that correct. All right. The Vicky Guerrero Divas Championship Invitational. I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but it's a one-fall match for this title. 14 divas. I can name them all if you'd like, or we can just make picks. Lance, what would you prefer?
Let's just make our picks.
Go for it.
My biggest prediction is that at least 8 to 10 of these women will spill to the floor as soon as the bell rings and continue to brawl there until the match is over.
Correct.
Otherwise, I fear that people will be getting stepped on and killed.
Could still happen.
I'm taking a bit of a long shot here. I'm picking Summer Rae because I think Summer Rae creates the most booking opportunities moving forward, in that her as the new girl on Total Divas, and from what I understand, not particularly popular with the other girls, her winning would create tremendous drama on that show. She's also a regular Raw personality that could rematch with AJ. She's got a built-in angle with Emma, with the Santino and Fandango mixed tags that they've been doing. And I think also, too, I think the teasing of perhaps separating her and Fandango, the fact that she could be a champion and his career has somewhat stalled, shall we say, they could build some tension and split them up because she now has a championship and no longer wants to play second fiddle. And Fandango won't want to go full-blown into Mark Merrow mode and valet for her, so I think they can split up. So there's a lot of booking options if Summer Rae wins, so I'm picking her.
That's not a bad prediction. I had not thought of that, but after seeing what they've done on Total Divas, not the worst prediction in the world. Todd, who is going to win this match?
I'm going with Rosa Mendez.
Oh, yeah?
I feel like she's peaking. She's got height. She's got reach. I feel like
new bleach
know, she's
job.
Been around for a while, and this is her time. I'm going Rosa Mendez.
Wow. I don't think she's going to win. I wanted to pull a Dave right there. How about I pick, just for the hell of it, Brie Bella, just so you can do the marriage storyline. Brie and Brian, both champions at their wedding. I'm sure something she dreamed about since she was a little girl.
And if they do they both wear their belts to the altar?
Oh, dear God, I hope not. I hope not.
Especially because Brian's got to wear two.
That's right. That'd be a hell of a cummerbund.
That's one thing, too, that I really hope they get one belt, because I find Randy Orton looks small carrying those big, huge belts on his shoulders. If Daniel Bryan has to carry both of those, I'm not sure you'll be able to see him behind them both.
Well, again, at the end of the day, the whole idea is we can now sell children two belts. Which indicates probably not. Although, they are moving that new WWE Network logo into more and more things, which means this belt gets more outdated as each day goes by. So, after all that time and money and effort and construction that went into that goddamn belt, it's almost time for a new one anyway. So, maybe we'll get it. And finally, we've got the Shield. At least as far as the main show. Shield against Kane and the Outlaws for the nothing, six-man tag. I guess the big question here is do they actually break up the Shield, as was their original plan? Or are we getting a babyface run through SummerSlam, which most people seem to think is where they're actually going? Todd, what do you think?
I wouldn't be surprised if they still broke them up, but at this point, I expect them to stay together. And, you know, obviously, as you point out, that's the key to the match. If they're breaking up, then they lose. If they're staying together, then they win. You know, and I expect them to stay together, so that would mean a win.
What do you think, Lance?
I think you have to leave them together. They're really popular. They're quite over. They're very good as a group. I think they've got a babyface run in them, and again, I think solidified as babyfaces, and then have one or two of them turn on Roman is the way to go. And SummerSlam wouldn't be a bad time to do it. So I think the Shield, New Age Outlaws and Kane certainly don't need a win.
All right, and all that leaves is the pre-show match. Usos, Matadores, Real Americans, and Ryback and Curtis Axel. Believe it or not, the tag team titles are on the line. It is a fatal four-way. Todd, who's walking out with the straps?
I figure the Usos. I mean, really, the only other possibility is the Real Americans, and I think the Usos are more likely, so that's where I'm going.
Lance, remember that day that you were bumped to the pre-show? I'm not sure if you recall.
I recall, Brian.
What would you have thought if you had been bumped to the pre-show, and meanwhile you knew that Rosa Mendez and many of these Exana-type ladies in the Divas single fall match for the title were getting a payoff for the actual WrestleMania show?
Well, you have to remember, Brian, I got bumped for the Miller Lite Catfight Girls.
That's right.
So Rosa Mendez and Oksana wouldn't bother me nearly as much.
Really?
Because they are at least on the road and wrestling and part of the roster.
I'm not actually sure that Rosa Mendez is on the road right now. Maybe she is.
Well, she's had matches. She pulls a regular WWE paycheck and is part of the roster.
And she's training hard, goddammit.
Well, I hadn't thought of that. Lance, when you see these 18,000 people on the main card, does it lead you to the conclusion that, in fact, there is no big Mania payoff this year?
It really doesn't enter into it at all, because regardless of how much money they decide to allot to payroll on the show, whether there be 12 people or 70 people, they can just divvy it up accordingly. Now, granted, the paydays will probably be a little smaller in that if it was just AJ and Naomi, for example, it'd be two girls splitting the Divas allotment of the paycheck, where now there's going to be 14 of them. So those in the Battle Royal and the Divas match, I don't imagine, are getting huge paydays, but who knows what everyone else will do. I still need to do my pick in the tag match. I'm really on the fence with the Usos or the Real Americans. I officially made my pick, and I went Real Americans, although that now makes it every title on the show is changing hands, which probably isn't going to happen. I think if Cesaro does it out of the giant swing and an uppercut, I think they'll get a babyface reaction, which is what they want. And I'm predicting the partners that don't get along for a brief period of time, which is always fun with your tag team champions. So I'm picking the Un-Americans, or the Real Americans, sorry.
I predict the Real Americans don't win, but I do think that we're going to get a 100-rep giant swing with El Torito. He'll be tossed high into the air and into the crowd, and then Cesaro will be dizzy, and he will immediately be pinned by the Usos, and everybody will be happy. That's my prediction. By the way, Lance, speaking of you, this, correct me if I'm wrong, is historic in that it is the first WrestleMania where one of your Storm Wrestling Academy graduates is working the main show. Is that correct?
That is true. I was worried they might get pre-showed, but it looks like the tag match is now. So, barring a catastrophe, Emma, Tennille Dashwood, will be the first person to graduate Storm Wrestling Academy and make it to WrestleMania. She's going to have a WrestleMania moment and technically be one up on me now. Because I only made the pre-show twice and a cameo sitting in a box watching at 17. So congrats to Emma. She will be getting her WrestleMania moment.
Now,
maybe she'll win.
As her trainer and as a father figure of sorts, as her trainer, do you approve of her relationship with Santino?
Well, she doesn't really have a...
Go with me here, Lance. Go with me. Do you approve of this relationship, this televised relationship?
I don't think they have a relationship, Brian. I think Santino wants them to, but they don't have one yet.
Well, technically, statistically, you're correct, as Triple H said. But go ahead, Lance.
Well, the problem is I don't watch any of the shows outside of Raw, so I haven't seen any of their relationship at all.
They haven't done anything on Raw?
I think they did one backstage thing that I missed somehow. I don't know whether I was just in the kitchen or what, but I haven't seen anything with them on Raw at all. I don't know whether it's been on Main Event or SmackDown or on the network, but I haven't seen anything since, God, weeks now.
All right, somebody here on Twitter wants to know, who does Daniel Bryan pin in the main event? I think it's obvious. He pins Orton.
Yeah, I think not pinning the champion tarnishes his victory somewhat. And then also, too, we've seen Bryan and Orton far too many times already, so at least Batista not being pinned would set him up as a challenger, especially because he did the promo, how dare I be in a match where I could lose and not even be pinned. So I would expect a Dave promo reminding us of that, and perhaps Daniel Bryan versus Big Dave in the months to come.
I think we'll have Daniel Bryan and Orton singles rematch the day after Mania on Raw, and then Daniel Bryan and Batista at Extreme Rules. And Todd, I want your thoughts on that. And also, Todd's odds on Sting showing up on Raw the day after WrestleMania.
That seems like a decent bet, because I think Sting is coming in pretty soon, and they like to have some sort of big surprise. So I think the odds of Sting coming in on that roster Mania are pretty good. As far as the Daniel Bryan and Batista and Orton stuff, I agree with everything you said. I think that Daniel Bryan beats Orton for the two reasons that Lance brings up. One, that you want to beat the champion. Two, that you want to save Batista as a challenger. And as far as the Orton and Bryan stuff, I expect them to wrap that up quickly after WrestleMania, because I don't think, given how many times they've wrestled, that it makes sense to go back to that as a singles match. I could see doing something with Daniel Bryan and Batista. I could also see them doing something with Daniel Bryan and Triple H as the top program coming out of Mania.
All right. Couple of other notes here before we wrap it up. Steve Austin, on his most recent podcast, reiterated his belief and insisted he believes that CM Punk is returning this Sunday. Todd, I know we had a mild disagreement about whether he would return or not last week, but now we're talking not ever. Will he return this Sunday? What do you think, Todd?
No, I don't think he will.
Yeah. Who are you to doubt Stone Cold Steve Austin? He's a legend.
Well, let me be fair to Steve Austin here, because I listened to what he said, and it wasn't like he was saying, you know, fuck all you guys, I'm right, you're wrong, CM Punk's coming back. He was just like, I'm sticking with my pick. It was a complete just, I'm sticking with what I said. I'm not sure if it's going to happen or not, but, you know, I won't go ahead and waffle on what I said. I didn't make anything at all out of it, other than, you know, Steve Austin just, you know, sticking by what he'd said before.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at a picture of the Andre the Giant trophy. they've actually got the life-size of a statue of Andre the Giant, which at first I thought was the trophy, and I was like, no, it's carrying that thing around. But the trophy itself, it looks like the Andre the Giant part of it is only about 2 feet tall, and the remaining 3 feet will be the base of the trophy, if you guys are wondering. So anyway, Lance,
is it bigger than the Stanley Cup?
I've seen the Stanley Cup, believe it or not, and the Stanley Cup is larger, in my opinion. Lance, do you think that Punk is back on Sunday?
I just don't see where he fits in. I would think there's a greater chance of him appearing on Monday, but I don't expect him at either. Although I did find it interesting, you're mentioning Sting, that the brief commercial clip for the Warrior DVD had him talking about Sting.
Huh? About that. Well, listen, I can tell you for a fact that I have talked to people who are certain that he signed. It's not been made officially, but they believe it was a secret signing, and you're going to see him very soon. So we'll see. And finally here, I just want to get both of your thoughts on a very... Now, granted, it's not a WrestleMania subject, but it's got a lot of talk of late, and that is Willow. Lance, what do you think of Willow?
I can't even watch Willow.
You can't even watch it?
No. The few times in the last couple of weeks that I've tried to watch Impact, if he's on, if sometimes I tap out before that, but quite often it's the Willow segment that I turn off. I turned off the Dumb and Dumber searching through the bush for Willow last week, and there was another time where he was in the rafters shrieking at someone that I just turned it off. It just seems silly to me. I think Missy said it best. It'd be like booking me and putting the ideal Canadian on the show. It's like, what's the
point? I think
that'd
be great.
Yes, actually, tomorrow will be like the fourth or sixth anniversary of our match, Brian.
Is it really?
Yes.
How about that? Too bad I retired. You'll never get that win back.
There you go.
What a heel. Todd, what do you think of Willow?
I mean, I think it's pretty strong unintentional comedy, but I don't know if you want
unintentional
comedy figure out of your most marketable star.
Unintentional? Have you watched the show? It's purely intentional comedy.
Well, I don't. I mean, who knows what's going on in Jeff Hardy's head, but I think this whole thing is probably his idea, and it's hard for me to imagine that Jeff Hardy's like, I'm going to create this character for everyone to laugh at me at what a goof I am. I mean, maybe he is, but I mean, maybe I'm not giving him enough credit for self-awareness, but I don't know. I don't see him, you know, concocting a plan to be laughed at.
Have you seen the Bromans music video, by the way?
No.
No. Lance, have you?
I tried, couldn't get through it.
Couldn't get through it, huh?
Nope.
Wow.
Maybe it'd be the big swerve and it's not actually Jeff Hardy. And they're just fooling us into thinking that Jeff Hardy is playing the Willow.
Maybe it's Matt Hardy. Would that make sense?
No, that would be silly as well. I'm just wondering if it's like his neighbor or something that Jeff just decided to stay home. He'll only do the big shows and this guy can fill in and stunt double for him.
All right, everybody. We're going to start wrapping it up. I want to... who should I have do plugs first? Todd, let's do it.
Todd should be the main event because he's so good at it.
Todd, he just buried you right there. You better do a good plug.
Sure. My Twitter account is Todd Martin MMA. And I'd like to plug Lance Storm's birthday. Happy birthday day early, Lance Storm.
Is your birthday tomorrow?
Yes. You beat me on my birthday, you bastard.
Gotta be kidding me.
No.
Wow. I don't give myself enough credit sometimes. Let's plug your stuff, Lance.
At Lance Storm on Twitter. Stormwrestling.com will take you to my website where there's information on my school. I don't imagine you'll be able to be the second Storm Wrestling Academy student to make it to WrestleMania after Emma being the first this Sunday, because I'd like to think that a couple of the guys that are in developmental now will beat you to it, but perhaps you could be the fourth or fifth or tenth or twelfth. So check out Storm Wrestling Academy on my website. Three classes a year. They book up early.
Sessions. Three sessions a year.
Three sessions a year. What did I say?
Classes.
Ah, yes. Three sessions a year. Each session has lots of classes in them. But I'm the one in the ring with you wrestling every day. I have matches with my students. If you're interested in getting into wrestling, check that out. And at Lance Storm on Twitter will get you all the other information you need.
That's right. So stormwrestling.com is the place to go. There are two sites, actually, the school site and his usual site. He's got commentaries, Q&As, photographs, a lot of fun stuff up at stormwrestling.com. Check out the school. You never know, Lance. Maybe Tyler Breeze will make a surprise appearance in the Battle Royal, and he'll trump Emma by actually being on WrestleMania first.
Ah, that would be funny if it did. Or perhaps even Sylvester Lafort.
Could be Lafort. You know what's funny about Sylvester Lafort? The only time I ever see him is on my Instagram, where he is regularly posting pictures of himself shirtless.
Yes.
I'd like to see him on television, but it's mostly on the Instagram. So you can check that out as well. And, of course, at Todd Martin MMA. Todd will be back next Thursday. Lance will be back in 2 weeks. And I will be back tonight with Dave. Make sure you check out, by the way, the show with Dave and Bix talking the Ultimate Warrior stuff, which is the wackiest thing ever. It's an awesome article in Fighting Spirit magazine, and we talk all about it on the show, so check that out. And that's it from here, everybody. Talk to you again later on tonight.